program. JD here, good to have you on board. We thank you as always.
Yes, you are listening to the Savage Nation, but no, this is not Dr. Savage. This is former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth of Arizona, and you and I have gotten together before, but the difference has been I've been a guest and Dr. Savage has been the host. What a great honor it is for me to be behind the Savage microphone. Dr. Savage, thank you for the opportunity. And this is a busy news day. You need only go to michaelsavage.com and you'll see what I'm talking about. Upper left, four Americans killed on yacht captured by Somali pirates. Now, even if you and I had not heard that earlier today, official Washington and the Washington way of giving us bad news would have been abundantly clear when the story emanated not from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, nor from the office of the Secretary of Defense, but instead it fell to Vice Admiral Mark Fox to meet the media and tell us what happened. Take a listen.
U.S. Naval Reaction Force is closed in on the Quest in small boats and boarded the yacht. As they responded to the gunfire, reaching and boarding the Quest, the U.S. sailors discovered that all four hostages had been shot by their captors. Despite immediate steps to provide life-saving care, all four of the American hostages died of their wounds.
Four Americans dead at the hands of Somali pirates. Don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. Our United States Navy, in particular, our special forces, our Navy SEALs, are outstanding fighting men. That's the operative term. Fighting men. The problem I immediately see with what went down involving four American hostages is this. Our fighting men were in the process of negotiating with the pirates. Now understand something. I know there are different groups of pirates in Somalia, but they all have a common denominator. They're terrorist scum. That's point number one. Point number two is they know what happened the last time they got mixed up with the U.S. Navy. And we had maybe, do you remember back to 2009? Really, the first terrorist act where our new commander-in-chief was tested, and it wasn't so much a test for President Obama as it was for our Navy SEALs. Can you imagine? They had in the gun sights of their high-powered rifles, as they had pulled alongside, I believe it was the Maersk, Alabama, the merchant marine ship, after the captain of that ship had been taken captive, they had the melon-like head of one of the terrorists right there in the crosshairs. And the way I recall it, it was as if our guys had the terrorists in the crosshairs for like 8 hours or something like that before the president finally gives the order to pull the trigger. So I don't know, and you don't know either, how exactly it went down. But when our Navy SEALs were called in, when our ship tracked down this band of pirates on the high seas, and they gave pursuit, been hearing in press accounts, our Navy was trying to negotiate. And then these pirates turn around, and what, they use a grenade launcher? And then our Navy has to react. Now, you can sit there and say, yeah, we hear you, J.D. Hayworth, the former congressman. You're no Navy SEAL. You're no great military strategist. Of course not. But I would simply point out to you that in our constitutional republic, ostensibly the president of the United States is the commander-in-chief, though lately this president has been revealed as the agitator-in-chief, more comfortable with his community organizing Saul Alinsky roots than actually dealing with the enemies of this country. In fact, as you and I get together, the tragic loss of these four Americans at the hands of these Somali pirates, we get the news on the day that a mayoral election is being held in Chicago. In far more tranquil times, my advice to this president, freely given, and I think it would be effective, and I offer this with nonpartisan motives, just simply to help the president understand what is at stake. President Obama, if you utilize the same ruthlessness with America's foreign enemies as you exercise against domestic political opponents, we'd be a lot better off. Why do you think Rahm Emanuel is going to be elected mayor of Chicago today? Well, it's because the machine wants it. And this is the great thing, and you've had the experience too. You listen to Dr. Savage, and he'll get a call. And I'll never forget, in the early days of the Obama administration, and forgive me, maybe it was even prior to the inauguration, Dr. Savage got a call from a Chicagoan and gave us all the insight we needed to know about what became the failed stimulus package. He said, so I go into this meeting, and we're all sitting around going, well, here's how we're going to divvy up the money. That expected stimulus money. You know, the stimulus that did nothing to help the economy? But that was the Chicago way. Rahm Emanuel is rolling over his opponents, outspending them, taking advantage of campaign finance loopholes, and who knows what else. And if you go back and review the history, the political history of Barack Obama, what has he always done? He has rolled over opponents. His first race for the state Senate, he rolled over one of his mentors, taking advantage of a technicality to get her out of the race. Then the one race he lost was to Bobby Rush. You know, Bobby was a Black Panther at one point in his life. Now a senior member of Congress. It's kind of wild. I served there and I'd see Bobby and I'd go, man, this is, you know, he was a pleasant enough guy. We didn't agree on much politically. But Bobby Rush was able to defeat Obama. That was his one political miscalculation. Fast forward to his Senate race and some key Republicans get knocked out. I believe it was Jack Ryan, not the fictional character of Tom Clancy fame, but an honest to goodness live Jack Ryan, who had his divorce strewn all over the Chicago newspapers. And ultimately, he had to get out of that race for the Senate. And then there's no need for me to chronicle what went on in 2008 with John McCain. Although when you fast forward to 2010, and yeah, for purposes of full disclosure, I challenged Mr. McCain in the Republican primary, and in a weird way, it was kind of flattering. John spent $30 million. Just stop and think about that. The one-time champion of campaign finance reform spent $30 million to beat me. In a weird way, that was kind of flattering. But what I said in the debates, in one of the debates, still holds true. If John McCain would have gone after Barack Obama with the truth, the way he went after me with some information that was less than truthful, McCain might be president today. But instead of an Annapolis graduate, instead of a Naval Academy graduate as commander-in-chief, we've got Barack Hussein Obama, who for whatever reason wants to show mercy to our foreign enemies, wants to apologize to nations abroad as if the United States is somehow culpable for the world's problems. And now we had the situation. Now we have the sad and sorry spectacle of four dead Americans because we tried to do this as if it were some sort of criminal act. We tried to send in the negotiators against a group that does not care to try to leverage and negotiate. Oh, sure, they wanted money, but their ideology, based on what they saw last time, when we successfully dispatched some of the pirates, the Somali pirates had their minds made up. And our special forces were put in the position of reacting rather than acting with dispatch and lethal force to rescue those four Americans. Oh, and in case you think these Americans were out looking for trouble, no. They were missionaries. In their own way, taking Bibles and evangelizing the world early in the 21st century. What was that that happened almost 2,000 years ago? A man named Paul in waters not very far from these international waters traveled to spread the good news. No, instead, these missionaries have become martyrs. And the latest example of a foreign policy that is tragically and hopelessly confused, that picks appeasement for our enemies and full tilt engagement for domestic political opponents. Something is seriously wrong here. 1-800-449-8255. This is J.D. Hayworth sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It's former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth of Arizona in for Michael Savage. Dr. Savage, thank you for this opportunity. And the number to call is 1-800-449-8255. Four Americans are dead. I do not fault the U.S. Navy. I fault the rules of engagement that have our special forces and have our sailors reacting. I think that's one reason those four Americans are dead. On line one, Joe from Chicago, you're on the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, former Congressman Hayward.
And just call me J.D., Joe.
Today, just imagine what a different world this would be today if actress Jerry Ryan's husband Jack would have won that Senate seat instead of Barack Obama. Anyway, one of the things that forced our nation to even have a U.S. Navy was the Barbary pirates, which in essence are Islamic radicals. And I don't understand why don't we use our Navy for what it was originally reestablished for, and that is to go and protect the U.S. interests of merchant marine and even recreational boating around the world. We know where all these hijacked vessels are going to, where the pirates moor them all at, and we know the villages where they're at, and we could easily, totally burn it to the ground as an act of retaliation and as a real demonstration that we mean business, but unfortunately our rules of engagement are cowardly these days.
Well, our rules of engagement, and thanks for the call, Joe, the problem is this. We are trying to treat an act of piracy, which is synonymous with an act of war, we are trying to treat it as if it is some sort of offense to haul guys back to federal courthouses in New York City and put them on trial. In fact, you remember just last week, right? One of the Somali pirates who attacked the Maersk, Alabama, the merchant marine, what, he was sentenced to 33 years behind bars. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he's going to Gitmo. I think they're going to keep him in a nice federal penitentiary as if he has committed a crime. No, no. This was an act of war. Piracy equates with warfare. And as Joe mentioned, and as you've heard Dr. Savage talk about it before, the fact is simply this. our Navy, and especially the United States Marine Corps from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. And by the way, what was that Mark Twain said? History does not repeat itself, but it rhymes. There's a lot going on in Tripoli, Libya right now involving Gaddafi. We'll get to that later, but we need to stick with this topic because it is so important. But you think back, our Marines marched over land, attacked Tripoli, our first military action as a new, young constitutional republic following our victory in the Revolutionary War was against the pirates, the Barbary Coast pirates, terrorists of their own time and day. And the powers of Europe were happy to pay tribute. And others had paid ransom. But the United States of America, with the United States Navy and the United States Marine Corps, said, wait a minute. There's a new nation born in freedom that will not submit to acts of terror on the high seas. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if our commander-in-chief remembered that part of our history? More of your calls coming up. This is J.D. Hayworth sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation, but obviously this is not Dr. Savage. Former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth of Arizona, so honored. Michael, thank you for the privilege of being behind this microphone, and we invite you to call 1-800-449-8255. Also, visit the website, michaelsavage.com. You'll see that it's just not a figure of speech. This is an incredibly busy news day. And we are focused on the story that leads at michaelsavage.com. Four Americans killed on yacht captured by Somali pirates. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255, the number to call. Before the break, I was talking about the fact that this administration, to put it politely, is confused when it comes to foreign policy. Even in the midst of comparatively, a high seas triumph back in 2009 when our Navy SEALs took out at least a few of the Somali pirates who had taken over the Maersk Alabama, the U.S.-flagged merchant marine ship in the Indian Ocean. It occurred back in April of 2009. Well, what was it? Just last week in New York City. New York City, yeah. New York City, we treated an act of piracy, which I equate with an act of war, we treated it like it was some sort of crime. And so a Somali man was sentenced to more than 33 years in prison. Yeah, here we are confronting historic deficits. And this Somali guy, this terrorist, this pirate, is going to be living in a federal penitentiary, living off you and me for the next 33 years. Something is terribly, terribly wrong with that picture. And it begins with the fact that we treat acts of war as if they are criminal offenses. No, they are acts of war. And with the news that four Americans were killed by Somali pirates, and yeah, apparently, according to Defense Department reports, we dispatched an equal number of pirates. But we've got these, we've got what, 17 that we've taken captive? Our commander-in-chief ought to empower our Navy and our special forces to interrogate those pirates, to utilize our intelligence assets, and before the day is done, airstrikes at least against the families, tribes, and factions dealing in piracy on the high seas. Back to the phones we go, 1-800-449-8255. From New York, on line one, it's Ira. Ira, this is J.D. in for Michael Savage, and you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, J.D., thank you for picking up the call. First, I want to thank you for your service to our country. You did a fine job. And people in Arizona, I have friends out there, and they really loved you when you were servicing our country in the Congress. My question and my comment will be, and I'd like you to expand on it. You actually just stole my thunder, what you just made a comment on with the pirates in the ocean there with the going after the tribes and the families that did that to our American citizens. You know, unfortunately, it's not a sovereign nation that did this, and it's be very difficult for us to take retaliation on that. But if there's a way, hopefully people in the military, if you're listening, you'll find a way to do it. And one other note, back in 91 or 93 when we had the incidents, so to speak, when we lost 20-some-odd brave soldiers, Delta Force and Rangers, did the United States ever extract payback for that? I'm still waiting for it. I'm 57 years old, and I know a lot of people in the military are just waiting for a president to have the cojones to do something about that. And maybe you can expand on that, J.D. Thank you.
Ira, I just want to thank you for your kind words, and yes, remembering that history from 1993, Black Hawk Down. And do you recall this? It was before I went into government service, and quite frankly, it was before the dawn of the intensive competition among cable news networks. At that point in time, you had the Alphabet Networks and CNN, and you had the surreal scene of American troops coming ashore in Somalia to lead, at first, relief efforts to feed the Somali people. You remember all our media was already on shore, and there was this surreal scene, and we figured, well, we're going in to do something good for people who are starving. Well, there were warlords and there were terrorists, and it resulted in a situation where we failed to understand. And look, our military, God bless them, those folks salute and do what they are ordered to do. But one of the ways we get into trouble is when we try to treat our military as a bunch of social workers or relief workers in camo and khaki. That's not the role of the military. They'll perform admirably, don't get me wrong. But you had a situation there where American troops proved to be an attractive target to those who hate America. We failed to understand that. And indeed, as Bush 41 gave way to Clinton, and we had the first bombing of the World Trade Center, and we had a response that was what? Not a foreign policy military response, but a criminal response in much the same way as you saw this guy from the incident in April of 2009 just being sentenced to prison last week in New York. You cannot treat acts of war as if they are criminal offenses. Worse, you cannot treat them in American courtrooms, and that is why it is so disappointing that our current commander-in-chief, willing to mix it up with sharp elbows and brass knuckles and whatever other rhetorical flourishes you want to use, metaphors to describe the political process in Chicago, Cook County, Illinois, that it compounds the difficulty. They're willing to play smash mouth there, but not with America's enemies. 1-800-449-8255. To Utah we go. My neighbors in Utah, on the line, it's Jerome. Jerome, you've got J.D. in for Michael on the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks a bunch. Just a quick note about Black Hawk Down. Thanks to Sally Struthers, we ended up doing a Meals on Wheel operation. What we didn't know was we were going right into the crosshairs of Al-Qaeda. But back to this piracy thing. Back in the 1700s, I believe the British says, catch a pirate, kill a pirate. End of story. And guess what? The incidence of piracy went way down. Now, the Somali pirates learned from their earlier mistake. They holed up on a bigger boat, and they had a lot more of them than the first time where there's only four of them and one hostage. So like I said, we need to go back to the old line, catch a parrot, kill a parrot.
I want to thank you for the call, Jerome, and I want to say this. I just hope that some extensive interrogation is going on of the surviving pirates. But why do I get the uneasy feeling that the Obama administration has advised our men and women in uniform to treat them with kid gloves, to try and, if not pamper them, then not aggravate them? It's sickening, and it's sad, and it's a sorry state of affairs. 1-800-449-8255. Back to the phones, to Wisconsin. Dave, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. In the world of the community organizer, we really don't need a military. I mean, it wasn't really the pirates' fault. They just need to maybe unionize, and they can bargain collectively.
It is a tragedy, but you have offered a point of humor to make a point, obviously, Dave, and you're right. I was just sitting here thinking the same thing. As you set it up right there, you're saying, they're just misunderstood. If they had better collective bargaining there off that African coast in Mogadishu, why life would just be grand for them.
It's our fault for not giving them what they need. I mean, there must be something we've done, you know.
Yeah, this incredible, and it started, again, I said earlier, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. That was Mark Twain's famous observation. But you think back about what's going on in the world, and we're going to get to this later, about rising oil costs, about appeasement and vacillation in terms of foreign policy, and this is like the Carter administration to the 1,000th power. We are getting the same kind of appeasement and retreat and vacillation that we got over three decades ago, and it does not bode well for the United States.
Correct.
David, I want to thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. Before the break, very quickly, Steve in New York, you're on the Savage Nation with J.D.
Hey, J.D., Semper Fi. Just got a question I could ask gingerly. I see these new Navy commercials, and their new slogan is a global force for good. So where's the force for good?
You said it all. You said it all, and it's not to fault the men and women in uniform. They salute and they carry out the orders they were given. But it is a tragic flaw to expect our military either to be social workers or relief workers or policemen. With all due respect to all those professions, that's not the job of the military. And we put our special forces today in an impossible position when we ask them to react. But worse still, we ask them to negotiate. So you ask politely, what good does that do? It gets us nowhere. And what is that a caller said earlier? When you confront a pirate, a good pirate is a dead pirate. This is a dangerous world. And the sooner this commander-in-chief understands that, the better off we're going to be. Now, there's more to talk about, including the implications. I touched on it just a second ago. The implications of what is going on now in Tripoli, and now what that will do economically with oil prices, and yes, what it means to us in terms of our national security and protecting our constitutional republic. 1-800-449-8255, the number to call. This is J.D. Hayworth sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Yes, this is the Savage Nation. No, this is not Dr. Savage. It's former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth of Arizona, honored to have the opportunity to fill in for Michael. Michael, thank you for this chance, and we welcome your calls, 1-800-449-8255. Check out the stories up for you to review at michaelsavage.com. Among those stories, a headline, Gaddafi defiant in face of revolt. And there is a picture of Muammar Gaddafi, who through the years, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, he looked like the disco tyrant. Today, he just looks like some sort of syphilitic wombat. He is sitting there holding an umbrella, wearing one of those caps. And I don't know, it's like those four-cornered caps that have the fur on them that used to see kids line up and wear at the bus stop. Or if you remember, the year that Gaddafi took power in Libya, 1969, there were famous border skirmishes between the two commie big boys, China and the Soviet Union, and you'd see blurry photographs of troops on both sides of that border wearing those goofy kind of winter-type hats. Well, that's what Gaddafi has on, and the guy's mind, whatever he had of a mind, is completely roasted and warped, and perhaps it's just because for so long he has been this combination of buffoonery and evil. And so now, with the people of Libya rebelling, he gets on Libyan television today, and he offers a speech that, it's as shameful and bizarre as he is. You will hear now the voice of the translator of Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi.
I have paid the price of my remaining here. My grandfather has fell martyr in the war before. It's not possible that I leave this place. I will be a martyr at the end.
You know what? That makes me want to barf. On a day when four Americans were martyred for their faith as missionaries on a ship filled with Bibles, going to far-flung parts of the world, going around the world on a yacht, not some yacht clubbers, not trying to be high and mighty, and going out and sharing the gospel. They were martyred for their faith. But Muammar Gaddafi, responding to reports in the press that he was blowing out of Tripoli and going to end up in Caracas, Venezuela with Hugo Chavez, he says, no, I'm staying here because I'm going to be a martyr. Oh, and just in case you're thinking, well, you know, that's the Middle East, there's no problem. Have you heard the news? Two dictators in our hemisphere, they're rooting for him. The aforementioned Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, and of course, everybody's murderous octogenarian, Fidel Castro in Cuba. They think Gaddafi is their kind of guy. And you know what? In a sad, sordid, sick sense, they are absolutely right. The man has been incredibly brutal. And, you know, now when we take a look at and think about history, it comes back with crystal clarity. 1986, we tied a terrorist attack to Gaddafi in Libya. We flew jets in. We bombed Tripoli. I'll never forget the headline in an Australian newspaper. Reagan nails those SOBs. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Tony in New York. Tony, you're with JD on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mr. Haywood.
Yes, sir, Tony.
Yes, I spent 20 years in the Marine Corps, 8 years in Force Reconnaissance, which is Special Ops Marine Corps.
Yes, sir.
Special Forces. And you're calling this an act of war? I mean, can you tell me who we're going to attack?
Yeah, the Somali pirates. That's who we ought to attack.
I mean, the Somali pirates, I mean, you're talking about teenagers. You're talking about, you know, a non...
Well, can I ask you this? First of all, Tony, let me thank you for your service. God bless you and those with whom you served. But, and especially in that conflict, did you stop to check the IDs of those who were fighting you in the jungles of Southeast Asia? I bet there were a bunch of kids there you had to fight. Did you? Gee. Well, Tony, boy, his bravery on the battlefield, or he gave us that resume, was betrayed by not being able to answer that question. I'm not here to glorify war, but I am here to say when American citizens are killed, it is the duty of the commander-in-chief to seek retaliation without mercy on those who knowingly, willingly kill Americans, not to bring them back to courtrooms in New York City and have them live in federal penitentiaries on the dime of American taxpayers who are already wrung out in difficult economic times. No, the future is not appeasement. It is effective foreign policy, measure for measure with a retaliation. It's former Congressman J.D. Hayworth in for Michael Savage. Stay with us on the Savage Nation.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yes, this is the Savage Nation, but no, it's not Dr. Savage. It's former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth of Arizona, and I am so honored, and just, you don't know how much fun I'm having filling in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you for this opportunity. You have a magnificent program, a great staff, and the greatest audience in the world, and I just thank you for letting me have a chance to spend some time with them. By the way, in this multimedia age, in this information age, go to your computer and go to the website michaelsavage.com. You'll see some of the stories we're talking about. And I don't often do this. I know from time to time the good doctor will offer constructive criticism of his intrepid internet staff. But when I read the headline, Gaddafi Defiant in Face of Revolt, I want to offer what I guess we would call a friendly amendment. Change the word defiant to delusional. Gaddafi, delusional in face of revolt. If you missed it earlier today, Libyan strongman, there's a cliche for you, the dictator of Libya, the sick so-and-so, who has run Libya since back in 1969. When you check out his picture at michaelsavage.com, you will see him. It's bizarre. He's holding up an umbrella. He's wearing one of those goofy little wintertime caps that you would see kids wear at the bus stop about this time of year if you live where it's cold. And he goes on Libyan television, and he goes into this rant. You and I, before the break at the top of the hour, we heard him have the temerity to describe himself as a martyr. But listen to Gaddafi. I guess years ago there was a country song, Making the Best of a Bad Situation. Well, it's being kind of charitable to use that title. But listen to the rantings of this obviously disturbed and evil man.
This is a glory for us, for the whole Libyan, for the whole Arab and Muslims. Our revolution has brought glory for the generations, and Libya will lead the revolution, lead America, lead Asia, lead the whole world. It cannot be stopped. This march cannot be stopped by those agents, those rats, those cats who move in the dark.
A translator offering the rantings of Muammar Gaddafi, who talks about the glory of Libya. Now, it's almost as if it's a back-to-school moment, because you remember those essay questions you would have on a history test or in current events, compare and contrast? And it is worth noting that, what, a couple of weeks ago, no matter all the terrible things said about Hosni Mubarak in Egypt, and look, I'm not here to be a big cheerleader for Mubarak, but what's incredibly instructive was the fact that the video signals emanated from Egypt largely unimpeded. We're not getting that from Libya, are we? We are hearing reports of dead bodies in the streets, hundreds of Libyans killed, and Muammar Gaddafi calls this a glorious time. And then he decides to direct his fury at you and me, talking about our agents, those rats, those cats who move in the dark. Gaddafi, I earnestly hope we have agents at work. I earnestly hope that we have worked in a way to remove you from power, because you are a scourge on your nation. You finally knuckled under in the early days of the conflict when you saw post 9/11 the United States was not going to cotton to your hijinks. You actually gave up information about nuclear materials and about missiles. But then you thought you're going to get cute. In the wake of unrest in Egypt, you started mouthing off. And your people had had enough of it. No, this is not some engineered coup from the United States. This is an uprising from people who have been subjected to tyranny and terror for the better part of four decades. And they've said enough. And we don't have the video. We get some shaky images from cell phones. We haven't gotten professional video out. But this is not a picnic. This is not some sort of easily done transition. When you hear Gaddafi's kid talk about the streets becoming rivers of blood, do you think that's rhetorical flourish? I don't. Yeah, there's always the chance that a creature like Gaddafi will exit, and I believe the reports that he has been invited to Venezuela. And you and I talked earlier about the words of friendship that dictators in our own hemisphere offered to Gaddafi. Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, Fidel Castro in Cuba. I'm not real keen on having Gaddafi as a hemispheric neighbor. And were there not a significant human price being paid right now on the streets of Tripoli and elsewhere in Libya, and were there not grave consequences in terms of America's energy supply, and were there not a response from the Obama administration that in and of itself borders on schizophrenia? The diplomatic corps, the State Department, the President of the United States, the signals are duplicitous, and I don't believe that's done with some sort of deviousness of forethought. I honestly believe that Barack Hussein Obama, who was supposed to, his election was supposed to be a signal to the third world, to other cultures, that our nation understood them, could empathize with them. And those in Washington said that the appointment of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, why that was a signal that there would be a purpose to our foreign policy. And whatever purpose that is, well, it's confused, to say the least. And isn't it interesting? Our president, who just, what, 3 short weeks ago, stood before the cameras and lectured one of our allies, who I would be quick to add was not without fault and problems, but stood there and lectured Hosni Mubarak. That same president, just a couple of years ago, when Iranian students had the guts to stand up to Ahmadinejad on the streets of Tehran, the silence was deafening from Washington. And now again, what comments have come from the president of the United States? Has he used his bully pulpit to lecture Gaddafi? To give way to freedom fighters in Libya? No, our president was in Cleveland today at a seminar, at a workshop about business. Breakout group, stuff that reminds you of a junior high, or I guess now the nomenclature is a middle school state student council convention. He's in Ohio, of course, because of domestic politics and the contagion that is the union unrest in Wisconsin has now spread to Ohio. Subjects you and I will talk about later. But for right now, let's hear the tightly scripted Hillary Clinton. I don't know if she was doing this with the benefit of a teleprompter, but listen to her robotic pronouncement concerning activities now going on in Libya.
We join the international community in strongly condemning the violence, as we've received reports of hundreds killed and many more injured. This bloodshed is completely unacceptable. It is the responsibility of the government of Libya to respect the universal rights of their own people, including their right to free expression and assembly.
Well, so far, so good. There's just one problem with that strong condemnation of violence in Libya. You see, a few days ago, in another foreign policy pronouncement, Secretary of State Clinton tried to cop a plea in front of the Asia Society in New York to explain why we just really need a kumbaya moment with terrorists of the Taliban.
Reconciling with an adversary that can be as brutal as the Taliban sounds distasteful, even unimaginable. And diplomacy would be a lot easier if we only had to talk to our friends.
Oh, so that's okay. Talking with the Taliban is just peachy keen. But the silence from our commander-in-chief, who could stand up and offer one of those lecturing moments he's so fond of, how he could dress down Gaddafi, it's just not in his vocabulary. But no need to worry, we've got Secretary Clinton. Libyan violence bad, appeasing the Taliban good. It's official now. Our foreign policy is absolutely schizophrenic. 1-800-449-8255. It's J.D. Hayworth in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It's former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth of Arizona in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for this opportunity. Our number to call, 1-800-449-8255. Lots of stories you can check out at michaelsavage.com. But I'm kind of excited because when I look here, I see that I've got a neighbor calling in, so to speak, from Tucson, Arizona. Robert, You're on the Savage Nation with J.D. and for Michael.
Congressman Hayworth, how are you today?
Hey, doing fine, Robert. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, first of all, I'm not politically correct on anything. I believe that we have a government, I wish they would change, that is full of empty rhetoric, all the way down from Obama to Clinton and to Napolitano. They're not allowing our military to do their job. And I served in the military from 1968 to 1995. And I served in four different conflicts. And it got to me when this deal that happened in Somalia was not done properly. I lost some friends over there. And I was one of these officers that was convinced that the only thing that the Somalis can understand is having cruise missiles literally torch Mogadishu and get rid of the problem. Because these people are the enemy. They don't understand nothing that our way of thinking. And they have to be dealt with, and according to, as well as like Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi. We should have got Gaddafi the first time. I don't know what happened, but we didn't get him. But I think our president needs to take another look at the situation, because all we're doing is allowing these Muslims and these radicals to compromise everything that we believe in.
Robert, I want to thank you for your service and thank you for your call. And I want to go back, in addition to hearing about your military service, I thought something you said at the outset was especially appropriate. You talked about you're not being politically correct. And let me just to say, to broaden this out, whenever you hear the term politically correct, just insert the words national suicide. Because when you get to a situation where you are using euphemisms or you're failing to directly confront the problems, and Robert is a fellow Arizonan, brought up Janet Napolitano, and you have to remember in the early days of the Obama administration, when Napolitano went over to become Secretary of Homeland Security, she wasn't even calling terrorist attacks terror attacks. She was calling them man-made events. Or some other inane topic. And you talk about military service, you have to allow the military to do their jobs. And yet we see confusion. And again, going back to what you and I talked about, is murdered by the Somali pirates. And the fact is, our military, I don't find fault with the Navy SEALs or those who are in pursuit, but they were given orders to be reactive, to try and negotiate, as if this were something going on in American City. It was not. It was on the high seas involving pirates who are terrorists. And we lost those brave martyrs for their faith because they were on a ship, not hoity-toity. They were there with Bibles to distribute. A confused society. Speaking of Janet Napolitano, oh, just wait till you hear what she was up to today. You're not going to believe it. It's JD in for Michael Savage. You're listening to The Savage Nation.
Savage.
One 800 449 8255. This is the Savage Nation, but quite obviously this is not Michael Savage, the good doctor away from the microphone. I'm former Congressman J.D. Hayworth of Arizona. Michael, thank you for the chance to spend time with your magnificent audience. And if you want to check out some of the stories we're following, go to michaelsavage.com. Again, if you want to check in with us, the call-in number is 1-800-449-8255. Robert in Tucson called up with a neighborly observation about the plague of the politically correct, the euphemism so often utilized that just lead me to say, whenever you hear the term politically correct, just substitute the words national suicide, because it's so to the reality of what is going on. And we have a situation where today, our brave Navy SEALs I believe, were given orders that were untenable on the high seas, as four Americans killed by Somali pirates, and our special forces were trying to do a hostage negotiation. You can't negotiate with terrorists. You have to eliminate them, especially when they have American hostages. But you'll recall Dr. Savage has talked about this, and I, again, let me stress, I'm not beating up on the enlisted in the Navy. I am beating up on some of the, rhetorically speaking, finding fault, taking issue, beating up, if you will, some of the folks atop the chain in terms of management and in leadership. The good doctor, Michael Savage, has chronicled for you his visit to the USS Stennis. And who is also there but a Chinese journalist? Let me put the word journalist in quotes. Taking pictures of every nook and cranny of the ship. And then what we just got reports last week, that the Chinese continue to steal everything in terms of military software and hardware that is not nailed down. Take a look at their new missiles, their anti-aircraft carrier missiles. Gee, you just wonder, don't you, if that so-called journalist who was on that excursion happened to be in the company of Dr. Savage, you just wonder if that quote-unquote Chinese journalist, if his pictures were utilized to copy or to find the vulnerabilities in ships like the Stennis, and now the Chinese have killer carrier missiles? Oh, and their own stealth aircraft? Are they teaming back up with the Russians on that stuff? We have confusion at the top. It begins with a commander-in-chief who is more comfortable as a street agitator-in-chief. And that filters down, because if you think politics is something in terms of running for office, you've seen nothing when it comes to trying to put oneself in position for major leadership at the Pentagon. And the uncertainty displayed by the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, it permeates so many different activities. Remember the whole question of gays in the military when we put an end to Don't Ask, Don't Tell? The one guy with the guts to stand up and say, no, it's wrong, was the Commandant of the Marine Corps, who told a Senate committee he shuddered to think about going into Bethesda and seeing kids maimed because, and I'm paraphrasing now, but because the political class decided to experiment sociologically with our armed forces. Story out right now, the Hartford Courant. Reversing itself, Navy grants ensign conscientious objector status. And it chronicles the story of an Annapolis-educated Navy submariner. He was at Groton. He was at Naval Submarine School. But then he filed a lawsuit with the help of the ACLU, saying that as his Navy career continued, his faith changed things for him. And the Navy was going to insist that he remain in service, but now the Navy has reversed itself, saying it's okay, you can go. There is one ray of hope in the story. The young man, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, Michael Izbicki, Izbicki. Apparently, he's going to reimburse you and me for his education at Annapolis. Says he's going to use what he learned in the Navy to serve his country in a peaceful way. I don't take issues with his belief. I don't take issue with his beliefs as much as I do the fact that it's not only in a court case where the Navy reverses itself, it's almost as if what happened on the high seas 300 miles from the Somali shore, what happened on the high seas, in essence, turned our SEALs into conscientious objectors, or at the very least, turned them into negotiators rather than the special forces warriors they are and are supposed to be. You and I talked about it a second ago. The other euphemisms being utilized, who could forget early in the Obama administration, Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano refused to mention terrorist attacks. She called them what? Man-made events? Man-made tragedies? When people would ask me as an Arizonan about the departure of Janet Napolitano from the job of governor in my home state, I would say Arizona's gain is the nation's loss. And that is proven true. And some of the stuff that Secretary Napolitano has done has been so ridiculous as to elicit laughter. But then the problem is, you realize it's those who intend us harm. They're the ones doing the laughing. And in case you missed it today, there was a funeral in Brownsville, Texas, for the ICE agent who was killed while on duty in Mexico last week. His name, Jaime Zapata. And Janet Napolitano shows up at the funeral to offer, I'm sorry, but this is my take on it, to offer empty words. Here's Secretary Napolitano earlier today.
He brought courage and commitment to the calling he so ably served, the cause of justice and the rule of law, protecting the vulnerable and innocent from harm, and protecting our border communities.
Secretary Napolitano, that was about as unconvincing as some Sharpie trying to say he could sell beachfront property in Yuma, Arizona. It's despicable, and it's only the latest iteration in what has been a sad and sorry state of affairs where Secretary Napolitano shows up to mouth words intended to offer solace. Do you recall 2 months ago, right there at Christmas time, it was Border Patrol Agent Brian Terry, and Secretary Napolitano was there at his funeral, right outside Detroit, if memory serves. Here was a guy serving on the Arizona border, killed in a shootout. And now, Iowa Senator Charles Grassley has launched a Senate judiciary investigation into trying to figure out what has gone on, because when it comes to Agent Brian Terry, who was killed in the line of duty with a firefight apparently with narco-terrorists, his own family members fear a government cover-up. If not a cover-up, it is a performance of incompetence that is unparalleled. This is the same Janet Napolitano who engaged in Orwellian newspeak, who told us our borders were more secure now than they have ever been. And this is the same Janet Napolitano who last week, in the wake of the murder of this ICE agent in Mexico's interior, this is the same Secretary Napolitano who pledged unlimited resources to the government of Mexico to find the killer of Agent Zapata? What is wrong with this picture? Psst, let me give you a hint. The government of Mexico is incapable of dealing with the threats within its boundaries. Do you remember, was it just last summer, when President Calderon came to Washington and there in front of a joint session of Congress lectured America's senators and representatives about allowing his citizens to come into the United States without documentation, lecturing us on what should be our policy on our border? And a good chunk of the leftists in our legislative branch actually stood and applauded. Is that Jaime Zapata, who gave his life last week in the service of this country as an agent for Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement, actually on duty in Mexico where he was not able to have a firearm? It is now believed that the Zetas, the one time, imagine our special forces. And this is, I hate to make this comparison, but I would never think this of our special forces, but just imagine if there were some sickos in our service, and thankfully they're screened, it would never happen here. Or I earnestly pray it would never happen, but imagine someone as proficient as those in our special forces ending up going to work for the bad guys, going to work for the drug dealers. That is exactly what has happened in Mexico. I wrote about it 5 years ago. I heard from FBI agents in my book, Whatever It Takes. I had an FBI agent come and tell me the story of a new special agent in charge in El Paso across the river from Ciudad Juarez in Mexico, where there are now, what, 8 murders? Is it a week or a month? I think it's 8 murders a week on average in Juarez, Mexico. And the special agent in charge, his personal cell phone rang. And on the other end of the phone was someone identifying himself as the local commander of the Zetas. And he said to the FBI agent, the new special agent in charge down there, he said, listen, you may have heard some talk that we've targeted you. Let me just put your mind at ease. We don't operate that way. We don't, we would never target you. But we know the guy who's been spreading that falsehood and that rumor. And if you'd like, we'll take him out. Now stop and think about that for a second. What was the real message from the leader of the Zetas to that FBI agent? It was this: hey, this is our turf. We know everything that goes on. I've got your personal phone number, and I say I would never do anything to you, but it's within my power. Now, apparently, the Zetas have decided to go after American law enforcement. What else happened last week? Yet another incursion by the Mexican military across our sovereign border. The open borders crowd would quote graffiti written in Spanish, which reads, "Borders are scars upon the earth." But you and I know in this post-9/11 world, nothing could be further from the truth. Borders are reasonable and necessary lines of geopolitical demarcation to denote sovereignty and security between and among nations. How sad it is that we have the sorry spectacle of Janet Napolitano showing up at yet another funeral to mouth words she doesn't even begin to believe. She ought to resign or be fired. But then again, this is the Obama administration, and what else did they tell us last week? Forget that border fence. We're not building another foot of it. It's tragic, and it's dangerous, and it's wrong. 1-800-449-8255. This is J.D. Hayworth sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation, but no, it's not Dr. Savage. It's former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth in for Michael. Good doctor, thank you for this opportunity. It's great to be with you. Check out the stories at michaelsavage.com and check in with us at 1-800-449-8255. You and I have been talking about a variety of stories, and if there is one theme that undergirds all the things you and I have talked about, it is this weird notion of being politically correct, to deal with euphemisms rather than confronting a problem head on. We got a call from my home state of Arizona a little bit earlier, from a listener down in Tucson who talked about the perils of being politically correct. And our great staff, and I first heard these comments from Dr. Savage when he was behind this microphone, and I think you and I should listen to them again. Do you recall in the wake of the shootings at Fort Hood, Major Nadal Hassan, supposedly an army psychologist who was basically an Islamo-fascist in our ranks, opened fire, killed 13 people at Fort Hood. And what did the Pentagon do? Well, Secretary Gates and Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, they had a little session where they talked about diversity and being very welcoming. Take a listen to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen.
My message to all those in uniform, and including Muslims in uniform, is how much we appreciate their service, the difference that they make, I have for my entire career, the diversity of our force is one of its greatest strengths, and that not unlike what the Secretary said, that no one should draw any rapid conclusions.
Let me amend my previous remarks. Hearing that soundbite again, it's not some sort of diversity seminar. It's as if the chairman of the Joint Chiefs has decided to become a kindergarten teacher, for crying out loud. And the tragedy is this. Here is a guy who has stood in harm's way and yet doesn't have the courage to say to the commander-in-chief, Mr. President, you are wrong in pandering to the politically correct. No, just salute and give us a little moralistic tale about not jumping to conclusions when, according to witnesses, Major Nadal Hassan was shouting Allahu Akbar as he was shooting his army colleagues. 1-800-449-8255. Back to the phones in Georgia. We've got Ann. Ann, this is JD in for Michael on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, first thing first on your political correctness, why be politically correct when you can be right? Okay, number two, the U.S. officials elected and or appointed are supposed to be concerned about the United States of America and their citizens. I want to know, why are they more concerned about those outside the United States?
Amen, Ann. You nailed it. Thanks for the call. The bottom line is this. On six occasions, I raised my right hand to take an oath to the Constitution of the United States, not the Charter of the United Nations.
Savage. Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I haven't followed exactly what's happening with the Wisconsin budget. I've got some budget problems here in Washington I've had to focus on. I would say, as a general proposition, that everybody's got to make some adjustments to new fiscal realities. You know, I think those kinds of adjustments are the right thing to do.
Uh-huh. Well, obviously, that was not Michael Savage, nor is the voice you're hearing right now. The voice you just heard was that of President Barack Hussein Obama. The voice you're hearing now belongs to former Arizona Congressman J.D. Hayworth, and I am so honored that Michael Savage gave me this opportunity to sit behind his microphone and share some time with you. Michael, thank you very much. And when you go to the website, michaelsavage.com, you see a lot of the stories we are talking about, including what the president calls an assault. Listen to President Obama try to explain what's going on right now in Wisconsin.
Some of what I've heard coming out of Wisconsin, where you're just making it harder for public employees to collectively bargain generally, seems like more of an assault on unions. And I think it's very important for us to understand that public employees, they're our neighbors. They're our friends.
Mr. President, let me try to break this to you gently. It's not an assault on unions. No, you and those on the left choose to insult hardworking American taxpayers and, sadly, even unemployed American taxpayers who are paying for the privilege of making sure that those with union contracts in the teachers' union in Wisconsin don't have to pay. This is going to be a delicious time to use this term. Don't have to pay their fair share of what is required for health insurance or for a pension. You know, these guys are not in the private sector. And what we are seeing, I'm flashing back to my days in college, taking a course at NC State on Soviet politics. The late, great Joe Mastro taught that course, told a story about traveling in the Soviet Union. And he talked about Aeroflot, the official Soviet airline, and how passengers would get on the plane and the flight crew and the flight attendants would get on the plane last, and how the passengers were supposed to stand because of this mythical glorification of the worker, and how the concept of service was non-existent. Now, take a look at what we have done with so-called public employees unions. Unions for bureaucrats. We have given people in the employee of our state and federal and county and municipal governments, we have given them generous packages that can never, ever in these tough economic times realistically continue. The money's not there. And yet here you have Barack Obama, who owes his election to no small part. If you had the three legs of the tripod, it would be the Hollywood left. And you would also have the trial lawyers bar and of course, the unions who give 99 and 44 100% of their dues to Democrat candidates. That's to whom Barack Obama owes his time in the White House. And so he is spinning like a whirling dervish, trying to humanize union thugs. Listen, there's more from President Obama.
Yeah, they make a lot of sacrifices and make a big contribution. And I think it's important not to vilify them or to suggest that somehow all these budget problems are due to public employees.
And Mr. President, nobody's suggesting that all the budget problems are due to public employees, but to suggest that these bureaucrats, and especially the Wisconsin Teachers Union, is making a lot of sacrifices and making a big contribution, at least in terms of their retirement and their health insurance, that is not the truth. And the fact is, and again, I would really invite you to go to michaelsavage.com. The headline, 2/3 of Wisconsin 8th graders cannot read proficiently. Mr. President, how is that making a big contribution? Time and again, we have seen this throughout our history. Dial it back now over a half century when Lyndon Johnson was president and he was going to have a great society. He was going to declare war on poverty. All we ended up doing was throwing money at problems and creating a whole lot of government jobs. And the poor, as Scripture reminds us, the poor are always among us. Now, I'm not saying that as some sort of fatalistic situation, but rather pointing out the irony of a so-called war on poverty that sure didn't eliminate poverty, but it created a whole lot of government jobs. I'll never forget, and I'll leave the name of this this commentator out, but he was pointing out to a group of conservatives, he was talking about the parallels between Ronald Reagan and John F. Kennedy. And he said, well, take a look at these two guys. John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, both strong on national defense. Both tax cutters. What's the real difference? And I said, well, here's the big difference. JFK signed an executive order allowing federal bureaucrats to unionize. And Ronald Reagan, in his first year in office, when the air traffic controllers tried to go out on strike, tried to be involved in a work stoppage, Ronald Reagan said, gave him one warning, said, come back to work. They didn't do so. Ronald Reagan fired them because they jeopardized public safety. You and I have reduced Calvin Coolidge to a caricature in American politics. Silent Cal. But it's worth noting that in 1919, when as governor of Massachusetts, the Boston police tried to go on strike, it was Calvin Coolidge who famously said, that man of few words who famously said, there is no right to strike against the public safety by anybody, anywhere, anytime. And we can say, well, wait a minute, these days cops don't go on strike. No, but you've seen a street theater, well, let's call it street agitation, Saul Alinsky style, play out in Madison, Wisconsin, in the capital of Wisconsin. And you've seen cops look the other way, and you've seen doctors in the employ of the state come down and write fraudulent notes to try and excuse teachers from not showing up to work. And if and here's an ironic situation. Do you remember, what was it, about a month ago when the First Lady, when Michelle Obama tried to tell us that her kid nutrition campaign, her anti-obesity campaign was really related to national security? And you know, like a lot of things, there's a grain of truth when you take a look at the kids trying to go into the volunteer military. Some of those kids can't do a single pull-up. Some of those kids aren't in shape. So there's a grain of truth there. But how much more is there a truth that making sure that we have an educated populace, making sure that our young people are properly educated, arguably is that not the first line of defense of a constitutional republic to have citizens who are engaged and who are literate? And what we have seen unfold in Wisconsin is how always and forever, not every teacher, but the teachers' union has shown that all that talk about helping kids and all that talk about children first is just so much malarkey, that nothing matters more to them than a contract where they get generous benefits that fly in the face of a state's ability to pay it any longer during these tough times. And so I would introduce members of the teachers' union in the state of Wisconsin and elsewhere to a subject called elementary mathematics, when the money is not there. And it's being worked on right now, the provision to allow states to declare bankruptcy when there is no money there. And one day, if the state of Wisconsin should declare bankruptcy, guess what? Your contract goes away. Now, do you want to keep three quarters of a loaf? Or see the entire thing go away? Or worse, are you a loafer laying out a class, not teaching our precious children, and getting fraudulent notes from doctors who are engaged in malpractice? That's what's unfolding on the streets of Madison, Wisconsin, and it is an absolute disgrace. 1-800-449-8255. It's J.D. Hayworth sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Well, that particular teacher may get an A-plus in Alinskyism, but she gets an F in economic history. It's former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Check out the stories we're talking about tonight on michaelsavage.com, and you'll see just how much these teachers, these unionistas, are, quote, for the kids. The headline is as follows. Two-thirds of Wisconsin eighth graders cannot read proficiently. Now, if we're doing all these things to throw money at problems like education, and we're making sure that the teachers have generous benefits and my goodness, don't have to work overtime, why aren't eighth graders in Wisconsin reading in a proficient manner? And why do we continue to get the big lie from street agitators like the teacher we just heard bleating about this being for the children? 1-800-449-8255. Back to the phones we go. The Hoosier State of Indiana is where we find Doug. Doug, you're on the Savage Nation with J.D. sitting in for Michael.
Yes, these fraudulent doctors that are writing these first mission slips. Question one is, if these people aren't sick and they're doing this, wouldn't that be malpractice or something? Like, couldn't the state just bar these doctors or investigate them? And if they're not real doctors, couldn't they put them in jail or fine them for not having a license to practice medicine?
Well, I'm not specifically familiar with the revised statutes of the state of Wisconsin, but I will tell you this, Doug. I think what you are asking is absolutely correct, and it would seem to me if what undergirds the basic notion of jurisprudence for you and me is the notion of what is reasonable. When you have a doctor who signs a note and puts down their identification number as if it ranks right there with a prescription, as a legal medical document, and they are knowingly producing a document that is false, to me, they've done something that is fraudulent. They've done something that arguably is malpractice and something that is actionable. Now, again, JD in my name stands for John David. I'm no juris doctor. I'm not a lawyer, never played one on TV, but Doug, I think what you were saying is absolutely correct, and it'll be interesting to see that unfold. Now, Doug, in your home state, we understand the contagion is spreading not only in Wisconsin, Ohio, and now we're hearing talk that in Indiana, Democrat state legislators are bolting the state. What can you tell us about that, Doug?
I know that all but I think two Democrats left the House today in the state of Indiana, and I guess most of them went to Illinois. So there's a lot of Democrats running in Illinois this week.
Yeah, let's think about that. And thanks for the call, Doug, because let's see now. The Wisconsin Senate Democrats all bolted for what is called a resort in Rockford, Illinois. And look, I've got friends from Rockford. I'm not ragging on a resort in Rockford, but I thought that was an interesting way to put it. And now the Indianans, the Hoosiers, the Democrat legislators are hightailing it to Illinois. And, you know, it's obvious why. If they went to a state with a Republican governor, they'd have real trouble. If those Indianans absconded into Ohio with my old congressional colleague, John Kasich, and now the governor of that state, he would not put up with it. And isn't it interesting? Stop and think about this. Ohio and Indiana, border states there, bordering each other. Kasich, now the governor of Ohio, a guy who chaired the budget committee. And Mitch Daniels, now in his second term in Indiana, someone who was in charge of the budget during the Bush administration. No wonder those guys are headed for Illinois, since Pat Quinn going to raise the taxes like 60%+? I'm sure those guys feel right at home. It's J.D. Hayworth in for Michael Savage. You're listening to The Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is The Savage Nation, but it's not Michael Savage. The good doctor is away from the microphone, and this is former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth, so honored with the opportunity of spending time with Michael Savage's audience, because you are magnificent. And Dr. Savage, thank you so much for this opportunity. Some great stories to check out at michaelsavage.com. But now, and I kind of have to do this, As a recovering member of Congress, one of the phrases we utilize is the term "for purposes of full disclosure." And as I bring on my guest, I need to say, for purposes of full disclosure, he's a friend of mine. And you know, what was that? Harry Truman said that if you want a friend in Washington, buy a dog. But not only is he a friend of mine, but his organization, he is the president of the National Right to Work Committee. His name is Mark Mix. And Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, J.D., what a privilege to be on the Savage Nation, but to be on with you also.
Well, I'm very grateful that you could make time to be with us, Mark, because all that is breaking loose, first in Wisconsin, now in Ohio, and just before the news break, we were talking about Indiana Democrat legislators absconding out of that state into Illinois, where there is a Democratic governor. And before we get into the nuts and bolts of Wisconsin, when it comes to Democrat state legislators abandoning their home states, why are they all seeking refuge in Illinois? Is it because Pat Quinn's a Democrat governor and he won't extradite them?
I think that's right, J.D. I think the fact is they have to go to a state where there's a Democrat governor, because a Republican governor, I guess, could arrest them for something, I suppose, and send them back to the states where they belong.
Wow. Mark Mix, president of the National Right to Work Foundation. I always think back to an observation by Arizona's favorite son, the late, great Barry Goldwater, who said, "People have a right to join a union, but they also have a right not to join a union." And that, to me, really typifies what right to work is all about. There are still a number of states in this nation where if you want to work, you've got to join a union.
That's right, J.D. You have to pay dues or fees to a union for the privilege of working in America. And that just sounds so foreign to everything that we were founded on, the idea of individual freedom and an experiment in individual responsibility and individual rights. Yet a private organization, a labor unions in America, have been granted the privilege either by a state legislature over government employees like Wisconsin, or by the federal government here in Washington, D.C., to compel workers to pay them dues or fees for the privilege of working. It's an outrage, but the issue's coming to a head, J.D., across the country.
And as we take a look at Wisconsin, what is your take on what is transpiring there with the teachers' union and other so-called public employees' unions?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of context there, J.D. As you well know, and probably your listeners know, a lot of states are suffering through very difficult financial times. And, you know, it's always interesting when times are good and revenue's flowing, it often has the impact of covering up certain problems that are building in organizations or in states. And in this case, we've got a financial situation that is exposing the cost and the growth of government over the last couple of decades. And Wisconsin's got a $3.6 billion deficit that they've got to address. And the only way they can do that is to really look at the main causes of the cost of that state. And personnel and benefits and wages are about 65%, I think, of the cost of that budget. And so to look at anything else without ignoring all of that would really be a disservice to the people of Wisconsin. And unfortunately, that problem is going to manifest itself in state after state as we move through this year. And so you have that problem, and then overlaying on that, you have Scott Walker, the Republican governor of Wisconsin, trying to roll back some of this union power that's existed in the private, in the public sector. And this is an interesting debate in and of itself. But further, he's actually going to, part of his bill has a right to work provision for state employees, saying they can choose whether or not to join a union. And it also says the state of Wisconsin will not use the state structure to collect dues and fees and political contributions for the union, which seems to me to be a reasonable response to providing a private organization with privileges above ordinary citizens.
Wow. So in essence, now correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like the actions that the governor is going to take basically turn Wisconsin, at least in terms of bureaucrats and public employees, into a right-to-work state.
That's right, J.D. The public employees in the state of Wisconsin, if this bill passes, would have the right to choose whether or not they want to pay dues or fees to a union. We had that in Indiana. We passed a right-to-work law for teachers in Indiana in 1995, and there's a debate going on, as you mentioned before the lead-in here, that Indiana legislators, Democrat legislators, have left their post and headed to Illinois over not just a bargaining issue, but the only issue on the table in Indiana is passage of a right-to-work law for private sector employees. And they have gotten up and they have left. And if they stay out past midnight tonight, that right-to-work bill will die because it won't have enough time to get a second reading before a crossover date that occurs in the state legislature. And this is kind of a unique thing. Not Congress wouldn't experience this, but if in a state legislature, a bill must pass the House of Origin of Introduction, at least in Indiana, by a certain date. Otherwise, it dies on the vine. And so Democrats have decided to walk out on the people of Indiana because of a right-to-work bill that has passed out of committee there.
Wow. Well, it'll be up to Governor Mitch Daniels and others in Republican legislative leadership to come up with the proper legislative strategy to offer some counterpoints to entice them back. For example, I understand in the state of Wisconsin, to get the Democrats back, they don't need a quorum if it's non-spending bills. So I understand the Wisconsin folks are actually going to bring up legislation to require photo ID to vote. And apparently that has the left all upset.
Absolutely. That's a bill they've been trying to get passed there for a long time. But with the departure of the Democrats there, and because it falls under that rule of it's not being a budget item, they can actually pass that with a simple majority of those present. And so the Democrats are going to be faced with a very difficult decision, and that is, do we stand up and fight against things that we oppose, or do we stay out of the state and let these things happen? The people of Wisconsin may benefit greatly from this, perhaps.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Mark. I know the National Right to Work Committee will stay on top of this. And if listeners want more information on your organization and on the right to work, where can they get that info?
They can go to the website on the Internet. Of course, that's the place to go these days. It's at www.nrtw.org.
All right. NRTW for National Right to Work. Mark Mix, president of the National Right to Work Committee, thanks so much for joining us on the Savage Nation.
JD, thank you.
Good fun. Hey, this is the great thing about being behind the microphone. And Dr. Savage, thanks again for this opportunity. We get to hear from people in the thick of it. And this gets back to a fundamental philosophy. Why do public employees need unions in the first place? I mean, stop and think about that for a second. If the goal of the union movement was to reform private corporations, why on earth would the public domain need unions? Why should there be unions for government workers, for bureaucrats? It's political, for leverage, and to set up a situation where you have another constituency that looks at you for certain favors. And that is what the left has done with the public union movement. 1-800-449-8255. It's J.D. Hayworth in for Michael Savage. Back to the phones we go. We've been talking a lot about Wisconsin. Let's hear from someone who lives there. Bruce, you're with J.D. in for Michael on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
When the teachers abandon their jobs, it affects the taxpayers in more than just their wages and millions of lost dollars. We also need to recognize how this affects the parents and the entire family of the students who are left to stay home and try to figure out how they're going to take care of their kids for the day, taking off work, losing pay, risking their jobs, hiring daycare services. The costs there are astronomical.
Yeah. Are you in that situation now, Bruce, or you have neighbors in that situation?
Well, I have 8 grandchildren, so my children are in that situation.
Wow. And I don't mean to get too personal, but we're so glad to have you. And you are living this right now in Wisconsin. With the high unemployment, are any of your kids out of work?
Yes, in fact, they are. And in fact, my daughter, my oldest daughter, her husband had to move to Eau Claire to get work. So, they're actually separated.
He had to move to Eau Claire, Wisconsin to find work to feed the family, and that family is sacrificing, as are other families, and yet the teachers don't want to just pay a little more for their health care or more for their own pensions. They're saying that's too much of a sacrifice. And let me just ask you this, Bruce. If you had it within your power, would you like to see Governor Walker have a Ronald Reagan moment? Would you like him to say either come back to work or you're fired?
Exactly. Tomorrow morning. I think the state would be better off if he were to make that decision. The sooner the better. And I'd like to congratulate Governor Walker for doing what we hired him to do. It's refreshing, and it gives you inspiration in the political process to finally see somebody doing what they said they were going to do. And this was no surprise to the state of Wisconsin or the public sector employees. They knew this was coming.
So yeah, it's not. It was the whole topic of the campaign, wasn't it? I mean, the whole notion of the fiscal future of the state and what needed to be done to rein in runaway government spending. So there's no mystery on this. Bruce, thank you so much for the call and what you're seeing there on the front lines in Wisconsin. 1-800-449-8255. Now to Pittsburgh. Ken, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello. My question is there any reason why all these Democratic legislators, when they leave en masse, why can't they be fired also?
Well, you know, that's very interesting, and it may not happen with a firing. Let's remember, not to get back into civics class, but understand our concept of federalism, where we have a federal government, but we also have 50 states that have statutes and eligible things that are different. That's the dynamism of our federal system. So Illinois and Indiana and Iowa are not going to be identical in terms of statewide election laws and eligibility and code of conduct. But I can tell you here in my home state of Arizona, something that has been used to great effectiveness is this, the notion of a recall. And I would not be surprised that in those states that have the ability to recall elected officials, that you may very well see an effort made to recall those state legislators who have absconded out of state to avoid making these decisions. Now, of course, the sword cuts two ways. You may also see action taken to recall the governor and to put this back into the political process. But that is one way it could be handled. And again, it depends on those states and what the state law dictates. It's very interesting here in Arizona because when you run for public office in Arizona, you have to go out and get petition signatures. I mean, here in this state, it's not a mere formality. If you're running for statewide office, you have to get the signatures, I think, of 0.5% of voters from your party who voted in the last election. And so that's thousands of signatures. And then when you deliver them to the Secretary of State here in Arizona, you also sign a document saying that if petitions are presented to recall you as you serve in office, that you will stand in a recall election. So that's what happens here in Arizona. And you know something, Ken, I wouldn't be surprised if we see similar actions and similar circumstances in other parts of the country. But that's a very good question to ask, and I thank you very much for it. So what's going to happen in your state? In Dr. Savage's state in California, you see a situation there where now Jerry Brown is governor again, the second time through, this time at the tender age of 72. He's the guy who petitioned for all the public employees to get in unions back when he was governor the first time around. What do you expect is going to happen in California? Or what's going to happen to the state that you call home? 1-800-449-8255. It's J.D. Hayworth sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It's the Savage Nation, and obviously this is not Michael Savage. It's former Congressman J.D. Hayworth of Arizona thanking the good doctor for this opportunity to fill in for him and taking your phone calls. Back to the phones we go to New York. We welcome Harrison to the Savage Nation. Hi, Harrison.
How are you? I would like to know how these senators that flee like that can get away with something like that. Is that even legal to do that?
Well, it apparently the law, and again, I don't have photographic insight into the statute, Harrison, but obviously, if you don't have a quorum, you can't get things done. And I've seen this not so much on Capitol Hill, but once as a member of Congress, I had to go to a state joint committee of the state Senate and state House, and they were going to vote on some recommendations, and one of the leftists didn't like it, didn't want to vote to approve kind of the minutes of what we were talking about, so he got up and took a hike. And I guess in one sense, people are free to flee. But there should be some consequences to it, Harrison, and I think your point is well taken, that if you want to run for public office to do a job, you are there to do the job, to go on the record, to explain your reasons for being in opposition, and to cast a no vote, not to hightail it out of town to try and take advantage of the rules and to try to use the rules of having a quorum as some sort of loophole to avoid it. A good point, Harrison, and thanks for the call. Before you and I part company, I really want to encourage you to go to michaelsavage.com, and on the upper right, which we're told in the old days of newspaper layouts, that was the most important place on the printed page, you see this dismaying headline, New Zealand's Darkest Day. Earthquake kills at least 65. And I was fortunate enough to have a chance to travel to New Zealand, specifically to the South Island, there to Christ Church, and to see the video images of what has transpired there, to take a look at the cathedral, a place we had visited, to see it in shambles, and to see the suffering there of the New Zealanders, commonly nicknamed the Kiwis. It'll be interesting as we deal with this, will there be the hue and cry at the United Nations so often reserved for the third world when there is some sort of natural disaster? Do you recall the tsunami that hit countries like Sri Lanka and other areas back early in the 2000s, how those in the UN took America to task, claiming we were not doing enough? I had occasion to visit those areas in the wake of the tsunami and to see USAID there helping the people. The fact is, the United States of America is a great nation because the United States of America is a good nation. And even amidst our economic difficulties, even amidst, really, when you count those who have stopped looking for work, close to 20% unemployment, even with the rise in gas prices, what is an extra $8 or 8.5% dangerously close to $100 a barrel, still the American people step up to help their neighbors and to help those in need. And I have no doubt we will see that again when it comes to what has transpired here in New Zealand. But the Prime Minister is calling it New Zealand's darkest day. It is a remarkable place with remarkable people, and they face a remarkable challenge dealing with this natural disaster. What a thrill it's been to fill in for Michael Savage. Former United States Congressman J.D. Hayworth saying, thanks, Michael, and thank you. We'll see you again soon. Take care.